Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. Thank you for VGM Advantage for sponsoring this. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, and we have a great guest today, David Qualls. David is the owner of Rehab Institute, providing rehabilitation services in Southwest Louisiana. David received his BS degree in physical therapy from Louisiana State University Medical Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, in 1974. Immediately after graduation, David began his career at West
Calcasieu.
Thank you for helping me. Cameron Hospital in Sulphur, Louisiana. 5 years later, David decided to leave the hospital setting and open up a private practice. He still operates the practice and treats patients each day. Volunteer services has always been a part of David's career. He is also an Eagle Scout. He has served the Louisiana Physical Therapy Association in many positions, including as its president. He received the LPTA David Warner Physical Therapist of the Year Award in 2003. He received the Lucy Blair Service Award in 2014 from APTA. David has been a delegate and a chief delegate of the APTA House of Delegates over the past 25 years. Qualls was honored with the Robert C. Dicus Award given by the private practice section in 2016. David also represented LPTA on the Louisiana Legislature Patient Access Resolution and helped the passage of recent patient access to physical therapy legislation in Louisiana. David Qualls and his wife Cindy still reside in Sulphur, Louisiana. Their children Joshua and his son Dre, along with Callie, husband Jordan, and daughter Ansley live in Sulphur as well. Small town, still all the family there. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, I'll just jump right in. You appear to me to still have all the passion, the excitement to keep doing what you're doing. What keeps you going so strong all these years?
I guess I was just born into a volunteer service, you know. Even back in school, you know, I was a guy that was in clubs, you know, and I served at that level. And just, you know, as I moved from high school into college and, you know, then into active practice, it was just, that was a part, you know, of me. I think that where maybe a lot of other people had hobbies that they did, volunteer service is my hobby, you know. And where I live, a lot of people don't understand that because I'm in the hunting, fishing capital of the world.
Yeah.
But volunteer service is just...
So how big a town is Sulphur, Louisiana?
Sulphur is about 25,000 people.
Okay.
And the rural area around it is probably an additional 20,000. So we have a service area, you know, probably 40,000 people.
You probably know most of them?
I do.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it at all. So tell me the story. When you gave your DICA speech last year, I love the story how you were a physical therapist, and I'm paraphrasing, so fill in the blanks, but you're a physical therapist, treating patients, enjoying what you're doing, but you went home to your wife and you said, I'm just not reaching enough people. I just need to do something else. So you actually considered maybe going back and going to seminary school. Is that right? So tell us the story.
Faith-based has been there for me for many, many years. I actually walked away from my first call to ministry when I was in high school. And I avoided that for probably almost 25 years. And in 1992, I had the opportunity to attend a retreat and receive that call again. And even though I didn't answer that call to full-time ministry as I envisioned what full-time ministry was, I, in addition to association activities, I just became tremendously involved, you know, in ministry within the state, within that retreat group, which Cindy and I became Louisiana chairpersons of that. After that, it led to a prison ministry, which I became the Louisiana chairman for that. And that, you know, outside service in ministry outside of practice continued to grow. Probably, that's exactly right. You know, about 20 years ago, mm-hmm. I got to that point mm-hmm. to where I just wasn't feeling fulfilled mm-hmm. in the clinical setting anymore, you know. Even though I realized early in my career that the opportunity to just sit and visit and touch people was magnificent, mm-hmm. and it had great results, you know, to people. But still, something wasn't there.
Yeah.
And that's when the consideration to leave the practice of physical therapy and enter into full-time ministry mm-hmm. was there. I, over the years, have had the opportunity to speak. I've had the opportunity to preach, mm-hmm. But up until this particular point, it was never a consideration at full time. And that was during that time was when was having that consideration. And that's when Cindy told me, she says, David, you're in ministry all day, every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's what you do. So it's like, are you in the pulpit preaching? No. Mm-hmm. But do you have an opportunity to touch people? Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. So, and you are able to touch them in a way that many other people don't have that opportunity.
Put it in a different perspective, and when you look at it through a different lens, it's like, man, you're doing a lot. How much more can you do, right?
It's absolutely. Awesome.
That's so cool. Well, you've been around a while, so what advice would you give to a new professional entering the profession now?
Well, I'm still excited, you know, about the profession, and I'm really excited about the future. I sure don't have all the answers, you mm-hmm. know, as to where the future is going to go. But I think that for that new graduate that's coming out, the opportunities for them are much greater mm-hmm. than when I came out 43 years ago. The availability for different types of practice settings are wide open for them. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty limited mm-hmm. back during that time. I mean, you didn't have a whole lot of choices, you know, back for us. So, you know, I just, you know, I just think that they need, you know, a new graduate needs to just look at a lot of different options, you know, and choose one. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't stay where I was, you know, after 5 years I changed. So if they get in a setting right there in practice and it's not about them and it's not for them, mm-hmm. then move on, because they'll never develop their fullest capacity until they find, you know, that place that they need to practice. Right. You know?
So if you could snap your fingers and just change something in our profession today, what would it be?
I guess I would love for us to be, I would love for the public to be able to recognize how much we, what we do. How
the value. Good,
the value that we have right mm-hmm. there. And it's there, you know, but we just can't get it.
Yeah, you think we're getting there? Is it getting better? Is it, well, what are people in your community? I mean, do you see them seeing it in a different way, or is it just like, because you know, we're both physical therapists, so we kind of drink the Kool-Aid, but it's kind of like, how can you not see this? I mean, you know, we're providing this value, and it seems like they just don't get it.
I think that it is getting better, and it's not all everybody else's fault. You know, some of it is us too. You know, in the way that we've chosen to promote what we do. Either we have or we haven't, or we hadn't done it to the fullest extent, you know, that we need to do.
Yeah.
I think that as we're now at that point, you know, of being almost totally fully integrated in direct access across the United States, mm-hmm. I think that's helped.
Yeah.
You know, and it's gonna help. It's helped us in Louisiana just in 1 year. You know, that's happening. But and I think that now forces us to look at that consumer more
And that's the individual that we need to direct our attention to, mm-hmm. not necessarily a referral source any longer, even though we still want that, even though, and to some degree, you still want to nurture that referral model. Still, we've got to take that step up, you know, and go directly to that consumer, I think, before we will. I look back and I think that, you know, over a period of time with all the data that we've collected, you know, and the majority of that is all positive about the benefits of physical therapy, but still it's not being perceived in a way that it should be, you know. So, you know, we've got work to do there, you know, and I'm ready for us to be there because I'm frustrated that we've had to gather all that information for so many years, and it's we still don't have any believers.
I mean, after a long time, that's for sure. I know that, you know, being in the profession that long, we've seen it obviously improve, and it's gotten so much better, and the opportunities are better, but there's some things like that that just, man, you think, man, we talked about this 30 years ago, you know.
That's
so
exactly
it takes a lot of patience. So what's your, when you get up in the day, you know, and head off to do your thing in the PT world and in your business, what's your biggest challenge you face today?
Well, I think in I look at it as a positive. Fortunately for me, I'm at the end of the spectrum, instead of at the beginning of the spectrum. So, you know, I can have a different perspective, you know, over what I do. And even in the practice setting that I'm in now, you know, I still go to the clinic 4 days a week, and I still treat patients 4 days a week. I do have the benefit now of not starting till about 10 o'clock in the morning.
Nice.
So I love that, but I go as late as I need to. But it's still the frustration of reimbursement, you know, as to the effort that physical therapists put into to their work, the effort that we put in to the individuals. And it, you know, even though the makeup, the personal makeup of most physical therapists, you get a lot of feedback, and you get, you know, just a lot of reward from that.
Yeah,
we have to be reimbursed to survive, you know. And it's just not there. I mean, in our industry, right there, when you look at where we, for me, you know, over 43 years of practice now, there's not many professions that receive less than they did 40 years ago on a percentage basis. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you start out and I'm billing $25 for a visit, but I'm getting $25, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, from a percentage standpoint, you know, you get 100% for what you bill. Now, that's not there, you know? And then at the same time, when, as everybody knows, as those costs have continuously increased for us to be able to provide that service, the amount that we get has, you know, has gotten less. So, you know, those are the frustrations. In addition to, you know, those, like I said, the costs are there, and and the even in the small, very small setting that I'm in now, it's unbelievable. The amount of time that is spent on the phone justifying what we do to be able to get that amount that we can get, you know,
That makes it hard. That definitely makes it hard. So being in that practice for that long, I'm curious, what patient has been your patient the longest? Do you know who it is? I mean, not maybe continuously, but, you know, over the years, come back and whatever.
Yes. Unfortunately, that individual has passed away.
Oh, okay.
You know, but he was probably an individual that was a patient for almost 30 years.
Yeah. So,
you know, it was he was a spinal nerve injury.
Yeah.
You know, and
so So he just keep coming back when he had absolutely. To and go on his own.
You know, we treated a regular basis for a while. We worked a lot, you know, on trying to do some recruitment in the early years, you know. But then it was mainly for stretching and motion and trying to adapt as his condition was deteriorating, you know, trying to adapt his physical capabilities so he could remain functional as much as he did. And he lived much, much longer than most people would, you know, in that particular setting because he was just such a driver.
I mean, must have been like losing a family member.
Oh, it was.
So I also know that back in the early 90s, I think, or sometime, and that's you actually went and tried a new business venture and then ran against the Balanced Budget Act and had to reshift. So tell us a little bit about that, and what did you learn from that experience?
Well, you know, it's funny, and that experience was neat, you know, and even looking back on it now, you know, and even today, even though that happened, you know, there was a huge amount of disappointment, but there's no bitterness there or whatever. Myself and four other physical therapists had just kind of, we each had our own practice, and then we started a little contracting business on the side, you know, and then that just continued to grow, and we got opportunities, and the first thing we knew, we had 30 locations in five states. Now, the problem was with that is that during that particular time, we were taking advantage of the Gerosite business. And we were kind of too heavily leveraged on that side, you know, versus where we might have been with the private clinic side or the hospital contracting side. And 1997, when the Balanced Budget Act came out, we were probably about, everything was done, the paperwork was almost completed, and we were about 30 days from a public offering.
Really?
For this business, right there.
Oh my gosh.
The Balanced Budget Act came and it just...
Overnight was gone.
Overnight. Overnight it was all gone, and we kind of all went back to our little little practices and you know.
So what'd you learn from that?
Well, you know, we number one was, you know, watch the balance of your contract for sure, you know, because we got too, we got heavily leveraged, you know, on that Gerosite deal, which was heavily leveraged all toward Medicare, you know, and the Balanced Budget Act just, you know, took that away. You know, the clinical sites we were able to maintain until we pretty much one by one, you know, found, we at that particular point and after that time, I don't think that we were ready to just manage just the practices at that particular point. So we kind of were able to gradually one by one sell those away, you know, so that we could at least walk away with going upside down, you know, at that particular point. But
tough times.
But it was. It was. But, you know, that, you know, we survived, you know. Everybody went back home and everybody just dug in because even with, you know, what was going on with that particular business during that time, each of us were that kind of local office was kind of still our place of report, but we had a corporate office during that time. And we just kind of went back to that little, because we all had kind of walked away and had some different positions within this new business. And it was time to where we had to kind of downsize, and we unfortunately had to lay off a few people, you know, so that we would have a position back in those practices individually right then.
But,
you know, that's when you step out there and you take a chance with the government, then sometimes
you lose.
Sometimes it goes, sometimes you lose, you know.
Now, without saying God or Jesus. So living or dead, who would you love to have an hour sit down conversation with, if you could be anybody?
You know, the within the field of physical therapy, I'll tell you that a tremendous amount of my success, I think, today was, I can go back and I can relate a 6-week time that I had in Columbus, Georgia with George McCluskey. Mm-hmm. And I saw Mr. McCluskey, the way he worked, the way he interacted with people, the way he dealt with issues or whatever. And I left there, and really that, even though I went back and started practicing in that hospital setting for over 5 years, that was really my motivation, mm-hmm. to go there, because of the way that practice was ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And even though I was able to keep up with Mr. McCluskey over a period of time, mm-hmm. and know kind of what was going on or whatever, I never took that opportunity to go back and just sit down with him. Number one, to thank him,
yeah.
you know, for what he had right. done. And number two, just to kind of get a little pearl from him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or whatever. So yeah. I mean, he was just a, you know, even yeah. with just that short period of time that I was with him, mm-hmm. he stayed with me, you know, throughout my career, you know.
Yeah.
And even now, you know, I have the opportunity, you know, to have relationship with his daughter, you know, and son-in-law,
yeah.
and know them and visit with them. So
right.
I've even been able to keep up, you know,
yeah.
and friends that work in that practice. So, you know, but. You know, after he died, I thought, man,
yeah,
I wish I had done that. Just to visit a little bit.
So, right, you know, there. I, you know, we both have a friend in Patrick and Susan. And so I met Mr. McCluskey one time, only really one time that I really talked to him. And as you know, he was kind of, you know, going downhill a little bit. But I walked in and then, and from my West Coast, you know, he said something to me, and it was in that slow Southern drawl. I looked at Patrick and I said, what did he say?
Yeah.
And Patrick goes, he said, you got legs like Earl Campbell. And I go, is that a good thing? And he goes, for Mr. McCluskey it is. I go, okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
He was, so as Patrick said, a very Southern gentleman, and somebody who, you know, made a lot of difference in a lot of people's lives. And,
he did.
Yeah, yes, yeah, indeed. That's great. Well, it's cool that you got that early experience.
Absolutely,
with him.
You know, and I, yeah. and like I said, I don't know of, you know, anybody that's out there that was, you know, in the big,
yeah.
in famous venue, you know.
I think the thing that maybe some of our younger listeners might not appreciate, because, you know, as you know, I had experience in a company with Jim McKillop, who was a peer of Mr. McCluskey, and to be able to do what they did in the pioneer days of private practice PT, I mean, hearing some of those stories, how they couldn't even get a business license, everybody thought they were crazy, and they had to deal with everyone thing, and all they cared about was money, and, you know, all these things. So to persevere and continue to do what they did in those times, I think is even more impressive when you put it in that perspective.
You know, I totally agree, Steve.
Yeah.
That's huge. What they did was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, When I was in PT school, you didn't really talk about wanting to go into private practice.
Right.
Because that was like a no-no, just because
yeah.
of what you said right there.
Yeah.
If that's your goal is about the dollar only,
yeah.
has absolutely nothing to do with patient care, which is so false.
Yeah.
But
That was the attitude.
That was the perspective and that so many people had then.
And they had to overcome that. And, you know, it's hard enough, as you know, to build a private practice and start from scratch and build it from the ground up. And to do that and be judged in that light, I just think back, and we didn't have it that bad.
No. I mean, when I chose to go into private practice, I was still single, and figured I basically was making $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
So it was like, look, all I have to do is see enough patients to equal to what I have now, and I can cover everything that I want. Well, at that particular point, my parents, the way that they were raised or whatever, couldn't understand really why I would leave a good, stable,
that solid job
to take a chance. And it just so happened that I had an uncle that was kind of more of the business-minded, and it was my uncle that really touched base with my parents, that said, it's going to be okay. Yeah. He'll be okay. He'll do okay,
Yeah.
So, I mean, but...
That's great. That's great. Now, what did they do? Were they college educated? Did they start means?
My dad was not. My dad worked for Mobil Oil, and probably... when he unfortunately he passed away on the job, but that was like when he had been with him for 40 years.
Yeah.
My mom was a junior college graduate and kind of worked in the clerical side up until the time my sister was born, and then she was a stay-at-home mom until after I went to college, and then she went back to work, just so she'd have something to do, but that was it. Their values were there, and their idea was that credit cards were not available then,
right.
So you only spent what you had, and you made sure that all your bills were paid every month.
The mentality that you go to work for this one company, you stay there your career, you get a pension, and life is good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So. But at that same time, too, just as I think that has definitely changed in the workplace today. Just as an employee would dedicate themselves to the company also dedicated themselves to the employee.
Yeah.
So
a little bit more looking out for your people.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, a lot of that is lost today. Even in the oil industry.
Definitely. So you brought it up. I don't have to. You're nearing the end of your career. So what's in the future for David Qualls? What comes after this?
I really don't know right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And I'm fortunate. I looked over a period of time, Steve, the ending of my career in private practice was definitely not how I thought it was going to lay out years ago. I thought it would be one of these situations to where, the practice would grow over a period of time and individuals would come in and then I could gradually just kind of, and that didn't happen. And I questioned that for a while, just like probably most people would, but I'm okay with that now. The second to last practice or office setting that I had, I kind of walked away from a little over 3 years ago. Fortunately, had some a younger group that was willing to come in and continue operating their business out of that clinic. So that was fine. And the little satellite clinic that we had opened during that time is what I still operate now. I would hope that either they or somebody else might be willing to do that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it could happen relatively soon, for me to walk away, and be finished with direct care. I think that I've gotten to the point to where I enjoy the one-on-one interaction with the patient still.
Yeah.
But there's still so much other stuff in the background now that interferes with that.
Yeah.
As I've told, you know, several people, even this weekend right here. We, fortunately, in the area of the state where I live in, we're in an economic boom right now. You know, so the not necessarily the oil and gas, but the liquefied natural gas period is going huge. So we've got multi-billion dollar projects that are kicking off. So, I just think that either, could I do something related to healthcare? Very possibly.
Yeah.
But might it be something in PR or, HR or risk management or whatever for some of these construction companies or something like that? Since practice and, practice has always been what I've done. And I'm not ready to go to the house yet because I don't have any of those hobbies that people normally have. As I said, the hobby that I have is volunteer work, and I'm going to continue to do that, nationally, hopefully, and locally.
Well, there's still a market for gray-haired preachers down there.
There is. And I don't know what might happen with that. I might that call that I turned away from a couple of times might end up where I am.
So as we wind down here, David, we always ask our interviewees, give us a pearl of wisdom in relation to leadership. So if you're going to give our listeners a pearl of wisdom to finish this off, what's your pearl of wisdom for us?
To get involved, to be involved. Don't just stay totally isolated within the practice setting that you're in. Connect outside that on the volunteer basis. Being a volunteer has allowed me over the years to grow much more than I ever thought that I would be able to do, And now, I think that at the same time, the onus then comes to myself or other people is that many times before individuals are willing to make that step, somebody has to make the ask. Once you reach out and make that ask or whatever, and then that individual answers that ask, then I probably would look at that kind of like with prayer. If you ask for something and you receive it, then don't forget to go back and give thanks for it. Same way with that individual that if you make the ask for somebody to join the volunteer ranks, outside of their career, whatever it is, and they do, don't go back to, don't forget to go back and thank them there.
And most people will say that when they volunteer at a very high level, that they get more out of it than they ever, they received more than they gave, because you think, I don't know if I have time to give this, but what you get back sometimes is so much greater. It's worth it. So
it has been for me. I would have never dreamed, when I graduated from physical therapy school in 1974, I would have never dreamed that my career would have been as successful and would have been as rewarding as it's been, both within the practice setting and within the volunteer world. You're exactly right.
Well, thanks so much. You've been very, very inspiring. So thank you for watching another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I want to thank VGM Advantage for sponsoring this. And also go to VGM Advantage's website as well as orange.coaching's website to see a whole gallery of video interviews and podcasts. So thank you very much for listening. And David, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.